Are you going to go testify on 6:40?
Thumbs up.
Well, we'll get started. Welcome, everybody, to our slightly late start on the committee meeting. For those who aren't aware, we had a very nice send-off for our retiring Secretary of State today, which is, I apologize for the delay, but that was something we had to do. It's a good thing. And we're going to start off with sending a couple of bills back to the Senate President, his request. So we're going to start off with the Chair moves. Let me start. This is the Chair opens a work session on Senate Bill 612 and 668. And the Chair would move the re-referral of these bills back to the Senate President's desk. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? The bills are referred. We'll now open a work session, our public hearing on Senate Bill 6. Richard.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 6 authorizes the Secretary of State to establish, maintain, enhance, and expand a central business registry, including providing more functions over the Internet and integrating functions with local government and public bodies. There's no revenue impact, but we have not yet received a fiscal impact statement on this measure.
And we would welcome Senate President Courtney and Majority Leader Rosenbaum. Please. Kate, here.
She said she'd come down as soon as she saw him.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Chair Byron. Vice Chair Atkinson and Senator Girard, Senator Starr, Senator Edwards. My name is Peter Courtney. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, Northeast in Salem, 97303. I'm a state senator, District 11. I've come here today to support Senate Bill 6. If our research is correct, and I believe the Secretary of State's representative is here, and the Secretary of State may be here later, we believe there's some 300,000 plus registered businesses in Oregon that is from the Secretary of State's office, those figures. We also believe there are 110,000 businesses that have employees. So the small businesses, we also understand, make up 98% of the businesses here in Oregon. I've never heard a figure quite that high. I knew that small businesses were the dominant players in our business community, but I never knew they were quite that significant. But those figures are coming from the Secretary of State's office, and so I welcome those figures. I like the fact that we are such a large and great small business state. There are many challenges inherent in starting a business, and I have not started one now. I'm looking at individuals who have, or individuals that have small businesses have been taking, they've become part of them. And I understand among those challenges are the legal requirements, permitting, and licensing. Now, presently, the Secretary of State has a website to help business owners and aspiring business owners navigate this process. What this bill does, it adds to the existing registry by including multiple government agencies. So it now reaches out to governmental agencies. It also adds cities and county businesses registration forms to the database. The Secretary of State is here to discuss the program in greater depth. But the bottom line is this, bill will make it a little bit easier, I don't want to promise the sky, a little bit easier to start and maintain a business in Oregon. That's what we're trying to do with this legislation. I want to commend the Secretary of State, Kate Brown, a person we all know, and we have served with, for the work that has already been done to streamline the business registration process here in our state. This piece of legislation just adds to an already existing effort, and I hope you can find a way with the great work of this committee and your committee administrators to be able to support this bill. Thank you very much, Chair Byron. Now it's my honor and privilege to join you.
Mr. President, Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you very much for scheduling this hearing on Senate Bill 6. I'm here in support of the bill, which would take the existing Secretary of State's online business registry and make it much more useful, we believe, to Oregon small businesses. So Senate Bill 6 is a common sense bill, and it would really make it easier for businesses especially the smaller businesses, to get up and running in Oregon. It also will help current businesses with the necessary license renewals to keep operating in Oregon by making the process for them to register easier, quicker, and putting that process all in one place. And just to give you one example of how this could be helpful, I wanted to talk to you about a business owner named Sam Pardue. He has a business in Portland that was just founded last November. It's called Indo Windows, and it's actually a wonderful company that's developed a very innovative alternative, a less expensive alternative to double pane windows that's just taken off and been extremely successful. And I had an opportunity to meet with Sam recently, and we were talking about just in general the challenges of starting and running a small business. And as you would expect, as with any small business owner, he's got a lot going on, just creating a product, hiring people, the day-to-day operations of keeping things going and expanding and keeping his customers happy. But when we talked about what ways we might be able to make it easier to do business in Oregon, he shared with me and my staff his experience using the existing Secretary of State's online business registry. He was able to use the website in order to register his business with the state, so that was very convenient. But then he said that he had absolutely no idea how to go about registering his business with the city. And so I think that's an example of how Senate Bill 6 could be part of the solution for people like Sam and other business owners like him. The goal of this bill is to integrate the Secretary of State's current online registry with the local government's business registration. And by accomplishing this vertical integration, it will simplify the current site, it will save time for business owners, and allow them to get more done at one time in one place by doing both registrations in the same place. I think, as you all know, during times like these, and as Oregon is beginning an economic recovery, we need to do everything that we possibly can to help small businesses in our state to thrive and grow. Senate Bill 6 is one small piece of our work this session to help those small businesses, but I truly believe that the bill will provide meaningful help. We've heard it straight from Sam Pardue and other business owners like him. I think we'll be equally enthusiastic. So I urge your support for Senate Bill 6. Thank you for scheduling the bill so early in the session. I guess it's not so early anymore, but thank you for giving it a full hearing, and would be happy to answer any questions. And I think that we will be shortly joined by our Secretary of State to talk a little more about the details.
Questions?
Mr. President, or Mr. Chair, I appreciate you testifying, Mr. President, Mr. Majority Leader. I have to admit, though, of all the things that I've heard from the business community that's wrong with the business environment in our state, I haven't heard this particular idea is something that needs to be corrected. I'm not saying that it's a bad bill or that I won't support it, but I do hope that this committee and this legislature honestly will take up issues that will improve the overall business climate in our state. But I just wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. President. Senator
Thank
Rosenbaum.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Secretary of State.
Have a great day.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I bring my certified smart person up with me, Mr. Chair?
You absolutely can.
I'm here. Good afternoon, committee members. Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Secretary of State Kate Brown, and I really appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today. And I'm certainly honored to appear on behalf of Senate Bill 6. I did want to thank the Senate President and the co-chair, Devlin, and the Senate Majority Leader for the introduction of the bill. I'm going to make some brief introductory remarks and then turn the presentation over to my Corporation Division Director, Peter Threlkeld. Over 30 years ago, Governor Attia envisioned a day when an Oregonian could get all the permits they needed to start a business in Oregon in one place at the same time. The goal was to make it as easy as possible to start a business and create new jobs. Our central business registry does just that. It enables anyone in Oregon to start a business and register with our corporation division, Department of Revenue, and Employment Department online at the same time. Phase 3 of the Central Business Registry, which is being implemented this biennium, incorporates another state agency, DCBS, or the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The best news is we're not done yet. By the end of the next biennium, we hope to have the state system totally connected to local governments as well. Our policy package, which is clearly envisioned by the passage of this bill, would add further enhancements to the system, enabling us to connect with local governments and add the licensing phase. For example, when and if implemented, if you needed a license to start your hair salon in Portland, you'd be able to get your new state business registry through the state, your city and county permits, and your license for hair salon all in one site. The system is pretty amazing, and the Central Business Registry was developed in-house before my time as Secretary of State with our Information Services Division. It took a little bit of technology. Actually, it took a lot of technology, lots of creativity, and, of course, a lot of patience. If the legislature supports Senate Bill 6 and funds our policy option package, we will finally be able to realize Governor Attia's vision of one-stop shopping, making it as easy as possible to start a business in Oregon and create new jobs. And most importantly, our customers really like it. I just wanted to share one comment from one customer. It was in July of 2010. Michael Daw from Wild Rivers Art Emporium in Gold Beach, Oregon, and I quote, "I could not believe that your system was so easy to use. Thank you. Two more businesses have joined the Oregon business crowd. Now if you can increase the job market in Oregon, more people will spend the money they make in my stores." Michael Daw, end quote. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Anything to add?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peter Threlkin. I'm the director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's office. We first implemented the Central Business Registry in 2007 to allow a business to register their assumed business name or doing business as with us at the Secretary of State's office. We've since expanded that so that corporations, limited liability companies, and foreign corporations, those that are organized out of Oregon, can register through the system. As Secretary Brown said, you can also register for up to 5 different tax programs, whether that's the Metro Tax, Lane Transit District, a number of other tax requirements or registrations at Department of Revenue. That information is also shared with Department of Employment. So we're adding the ability to update those registrations now online. We rolled a couple of those new features out last month. In the last 4 years, we're now getting 65% of all new businesses are registering online. We're up to 125,000 registrations during that period of time, and it just continues to grow. So our focus is to try and make it as simple as possible, really lower the barriers and the thresholds for business. We want to encourage more business in Oregon and then do everything that we can to help them grow and succeed and prosper. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
So, Peter, this allows them to do their annual renewal online as well?
We're in the process of developing that right now. Nonprofits and business corporations, as of last week, were able to use the system to update their information. So they pay their fees, and they can also update their officers, their mailing addresses, their information, all online. We're bringing limited liability companies on in the next couple of weeks. And also, this biennium will be adding in the ability to update registrations with the Department of Revenue and Employment.
How do they pay their fees?
Our fees are paid to the Secretary of State. The annual filing fee is we use DAS's e-commerce service. And so as you go through the process and you hit the pay now button, we send them over to the DAS website. They enter their credit card information in the secure system there. That information is never actually recorded or captured on our site. And then they're passed back through to us. So it's an industry compliant website that's been in existence since, I think, 2002.
So, in essence, they have to have a credit card.
They have to have a credit card. Yeah, but the new e-government vendor that we expect will offer electronic check capabilities. So we're really looking forward to having that expanded so that more people will be willing and able to take advantage of the online system.
Other questions, Secretary Brown? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. You have a question? Thank you, Chair. One thing that was mentioned in the bill was integrating with local governments, and could you speak to that, and specifically some of the local governments that currently have no technological registration system available? How are you going to work with that?
Certainly, Chair Byer, members of the committee. We've looked at some of the local governments. Probably about 60% of all businesses are in the Portland market, but we don't want to just concentrate on Portland. That's certainly a lot of bang for the buck there. We had just last year alone 8,400 businesses that registered with us that were from Portland or that used a Portland address. The information that we're capturing is pretty close to the information that Portland requires and also Multnomah County. It would be a very simple process for us to take that information, put it into, format it into the Portland application and pass that on to them, saving time for the business and for the city of Portland. Beyond that, Bend is a, had 1,400 registrations with us last year. I know that the city of Bend currently gets our new business database every month, or our list of new businesses, so they can go and do follow-up manually to make sure that those businesses are registering and getting a license in Bend. We could do all of that in one fell swoop. You know, Bend, Beaverton and Portland both have online systems. The rest of the cities, whether it's Bend, Hillsborough, Medford, Tigard, Roseburg, Klamath Falls, are some of the bigger ones that have license requirements. They don't currently have an online system, but we could easily provide either a PDF or a document, a simple download, so that they could have the information and just share that with them and complete the registrations.
Any other questions for the committee? Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Let's see, I don't have any others signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 6? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 6, and I see Senator Whitsett in the audience, so I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 586. Senator Richard and Senator
Whitsett, if you'd like to come up. Okay, Senate Bill 586 modifies requirements that contracts for the construction of or major renovation of public buildings have a 1.5% of the contract price dedicated to solar energy technology to allow that 1.5% to be dedicated to any green energy technology, not just limited to solar technology. There's no revenue impact, but we do not have a fiscal impact statement yet on this bill.
Senator.
Thank you, Chair Byer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Whitsett. I represent District 28 in the Oregon Senate. With your permission, I would like to invite Dr. Chris Maples from OIT and Daryl Anderson from Anderson Engineering in Lakeview to testify with me, if that would be all right.
That would be just fine.
Continue, please. Currently, ORS 279.527 requires that 1.5% of the total contract price of a new public building, or 1.5% of the cost of the renovation of an existing building, shall be expended for the inclusion of appropriate solar energy technology. Senate Bill 586 expands the permissible use of that 1.5% of total contract price to green energy technology, thereby including wind, geothermal, hydroelectric, biomass, and conservation techniques to those permissible uses. I have particular interest in geothermal energy, particularly since Klamath Falls, Oregon Institute of Technology, and the City of Lakeview have extensive geothermal resources. I'm very fortunate to have two very knowledgeable gentlemen here today to help with the presentation of this bill. On my left, Dr. Chris Maples, the President of Oregon Institute of Technology. To my right, Darrell Anderson, who is President of the Anderson Engineering and Survey Incorporated from Lakeview, Oregon. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I would like to have them describe this the need for this bill to you.
Go ahead, whoever would like to go.
Shall I go first? Thank you very much. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Chris Maples, President of Oregon Institute of Technology, and I will do a very non-traditional academic thing and be brief. The purpose here for me today is to generally describe what we do at Oregon Institute of Technology in terms of green energy in a broad sense, and talk about the green energy that we teach in a broad sense and what that means for providing not only classes for students, but information and resources for the citizens of Oregon. From the Senate Bill 586, there is a definition of a green energy technology that includes on-site wind energy generation, on-site geothermal energy generation, hydroelectric energy generation by a facility of not more than 10 megawatts of capacity, biomass as an energy source, solar electric or solar thermal resources and passive solar energy systems, and conservation techniques. And all of these, broadly applied, are unique in being all present in the state of Oregon. We have a rich resource of different types of energy, green energy options available to us on local scales. And the Oregon Institute of Technology has been able to take advantage of this dramatically for the past 40-plus years. We have heated most of the campus that we have in Klamath Falls, and we've done some calculations on approximately what we have saved the Oregon University system during that 40-year period of time just on the heating side, and it's about $26 million. We now have the first electricity-generating geothermal power plant in the state of Oregon on our campus, and it is offsetting nearly 20% of our energy needs. We will be putting in a larger geothermal power plant in the coming couple of years. Combined, these two power plants will offset about three-quarters of our energy needs. We're also home to the Oregon Renewable Energy Center, OREC, and without going into great detail, you will have a handout. I did provide a handout, and I sent things ahead of time. OREC basically is here to serve the people of Oregon. It was established by the legislature on the campus at Oregon Institute of Technology, and we provide energy conservation and renewable energy advice and use and seminars to the general public throughout Oregon and in the Pacific Northwest with lots of educational programs, practical information. Part of the OREC is the Geo Heat Center, which has been at the Oregon Institute of Technology for a very long time, where there's a huge amount of data on geothermal resources that are available. We have then built on this to offer the nation's first renewable energy engineering degree. And we purposely have not picked a particular sector to focus on. Rather, our renewable energy engineering students learn the basics of mechanical and electrical engineering and apply them to a wide range of green energy projects. We had students build a very small dam and produced some micro hydro. We have worked on wind. We have worked on solar. We have worked on biomass. We have worked on geothermal. The summary of this is that the way we go at renewable energy engineering, being an Oregon polytechnic institution focusing on undergraduate education, is to cover the wide range of green energy options that are available by being here in Oregon, and not just focusing on any one sector. So I'm here to encourage an inclusion of a wide range of energy options that would be available irrespective of where you are in the state, and it would truly open up a huge amount of the state for these types of opportunities. time's up.
Might be a horse needing to get delivered.
There's a first.
Mr. Anderson, do you have comments?
Yes. Thank you, Chair, Senators of the Committee.
For the record, you are?
I am Darrell Anderson. I live in Lakeview, Oregon. Been a consulting engineer for 28 years. Currently, I'm serving as the project manager for the Lake District Hospital project in Lakeview, Oregon. This is a $20 million addition that Lakeview is putting on to its hospital and some other remodel issues on its existing hospital. The hospital there serves quite a large area, about a 100-mile radius into California, Nevada, and parts of southeast Oregon. We're fortunate in Lakeview to have geothermal resources. The hospital additions were designed to use geothermal resources. We have hot water there. It can be used for direct source heating. We're in support of this bill to have additional energy sources listed as green and sustainable energy under this bill and not just the solar requirement. Lake District Hospital invested approximately $250,000 in their design and construction to accept the geothermal heat. When we get the geothermal heat to the hospital, the yearly savings will be about $33,000 per year to the taxpayers of Lakeview Health District. Comparing that with the solar requirement, if that was invested in, we would save approximately only about $3,000 per year. So the savings is huge to the health district. Over the 30-year life of the system, the geothermal direct use of geothermal water saves about $1.4 million for the health district. So we're asking your consideration to add this to the another source of energy in this bill and save our taxpayers some money in Lakeview.
Thank you. Questions, this panel?
Senator Wissett, I did have one, and it was in your definition of green energy down on item F. It says conservation techniques that achieve a reduction in energy usage of at least 20%. I assume you mean beyond the minimum required by the building codes currently?
Yep.
Is that me?
Okay. No other questions?
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Let's see, I only have one other person signed up, Mr. Landauer.
Thank you, Senator.
Good.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mark Landauer representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We have approximately 900 member districts throughout the state of Oregon providing a variety of different services to the citizens of our state. SDO supports Senate Bill 586 and would simply suggest that an expansion of the types of green energy technologies be considered by the committee if the committee chooses to move this forward. There's wave energy that could be appropriate in some instances, biodigesters, which are commonly or increasingly becoming more common at sewage treatment plants, and any new emerging energy technologies having to come back every session to address a new type of energy type that is developed over the years may become cumbersome for the legislature, but just wanted to add that there are other types of green energy technologies available out there that may be more appropriate in certain circumstances. Thank you very much, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I hadn't thought about that. I would agree with the biodigesters. I'm going to have a little trouble seeing wave energy on a public facility, but there's a possibility there.
Never know.
You might want to suggest some language.
Be happy to.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Landauer? Seeing none.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 586? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on 586. We do not have a fiscal, so we can't act on the bill. We will then, what did I do? I lost my agenda. So we will now open the public hearing on Senate Bill 56. And who do I have on that?
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 56 authorized the Oregon Business Development Department to charge fees and administrative costs for program benefits incurred by the department in the administration of any program, fund, or account under the department's direction or control. This bill has no revenue impact, but it does have a fiscal impact, which I handed out to the committee, but there's no recommendation by legislative fiscal to refer this to Ways and Means.
And the department. Y'all come on down.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Schessler. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Business Development Department. Curiously, our department can only charge fees associated with the loan programs that we have. And as you may have heard, our focus on jobs and business development support has drawn us into other areas that do provide valuable benefits other than just our loan programs. One of the best examples that comes to mind for me is our industrial land certification program. Because no loan is involved, we cannot recover the sunk costs such as might be incurred in a wetland delineation on an industrial site. Provisions of this bill would allow us to recover those costs in our efforts that benefit that property owner, and that's usually a private property owner. And frankly, in our history of industrial site certification, most property owners are willing to reimburse us for those costs, given that we will take the risk and expend the effort to get those sorts of delineations identified. But right now, we do not have the authority to collect any reimbursement in our present statutes. And I would also add that the industrial site example also reinforces that a modest fee to get the person enrolled in our industrial site program also assures that that property owner has an invested interest in that site certification and will actually participate in the certification process. We do have history of owners that have expressed interest in being certified but have never really followed through, and we think a modest financial incentive might incent them to participate more actively. And with that, I'll turn it over to any comments that Mike Williams might have, or Gary Van Huffel, who's with me as well. But again, this is a broad authority for the department. I think that the industrial site certification program serves as the best immediate example that we have.
But do you have others?
We haven't identified one at present, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. No, we have no other expectations, but we do have numerous grant programs, brownfield certifications, that sort of activities. And again, with a brownfield grant, you know, we provide the benefit. There's no fee associated with it.
Do you have a sense of what level of fee you'd be looking at for the site certification?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and our fiscal impact for industrial sites, for instance, we're suggesting a fee of $500 to get a person signed up to have their site certified, and upon certification, ultimately collecting an additional $1,000, a relatively modest fee for the benefit derived.
Now, that process, just getting it certified, is pretty expensive, though, and I think it might speak to why you don't have a whole lot of applicants so far. I have some concerns about that. Go ahead, John.
Mike. Chairman Beyer and committee members, my name is Gary Van Huffel. I'm the Business Development Manager for Business Oregon. The Certified Industrial Lands Program is actually in my area of responsibility. Mike Williams is the coordinator for that program. And again, as we were, we had a lot of interest in this program over the last couple years. So, I mean, we were looking at a number of applications. We were reviewing those that had not been certified over the last 4 to 5 years of the program. And this was an area where we just thought we could, again, improve the program by collecting a fee up front, really kind of upping the ante to make sure that they were serious about certification. And And also on the tail end, which is the most expensive part, and Mike can comment more on this, is it's about $3,500 for us to contract with an outside third-party certifier to come and visit the site upon completion of all the studies and other information we need from the site owner. Again, that's a fairly expensive part of the process, and again, it represents about a third of that final certification cost. So, again, as far as, recovery of funds, Lynn Schessler spoke a bit about that. Again, it averages about $20,000 to $30,000 per site to actually do all the technical studies and review. And, again, it's at some point, if we put monies into that program to help certify the site, we have an opportunity to recover those costs. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Mike Williams that can answer some of your more detailed questions.
Any comments?
Senator Beyer and commission members, I think that the question here is two things. It's the fees that we're talking about, the upfront fees to get into the program, as well as cost recovery over time. And I don't know if you have any questions about the cost of a certification. The sunk costs or the costs that are consistent with every certification are fairly low. It'd be the administrative costs, my salary, and getting the certifier in, who's an independent consultant. But the variable costs are very high. The wetlands delineations, the environmental determinations, getting access or transportation can cost quite a bit of money for an individual site. And we would hope to get some sort of cost recovery. And we don't have a lot of pushback on cost recovery, especially if it takes place at the sale of the land, because that's when you look at land economics, that's when there's money to pay brokerage fees and title fees and a lot of other things. And we think that that'd be a good opportunity for some cost recovery for a program that does bring a lot of benefit to the landowner as well as the state.
So is the applicant required to pay for the wetland determinations and any actions necessary to bring the site up?
It's in the past, it's been a negotiated process. We have paid for or shared or help pay for portions of that in the past. Currently, we don't have any direct funds for doing that kind of work, so we're requiring the applicant to do that. And because of that, we often they're not moving forward with certification in a lot of areas. Especially in the Valley, we have quite a few certifications. We've probably had over 130 property show interest and certification gotten into the program. We've only certified 68 over the lifetime of the program, so quite a few have dropped out for one reason or another, and probably the biggest reason is that there was an issue, a high dollar issue that had to be dealt with, and we weren't willing to pay for it or share that cost, and the applicant dropped away.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That's all I have to wishes to testify on this one. Is there anybody else? If not, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 556. And I don't think we're going to act on this one. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 57. Richard.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 57 authorizes the Oregon Business Development Commission to use revenue bonds to finance economic development projects that are primarily for the generation, transmission, sale, and distribution of electrical energy. There's no revenue impact on this, but there is a fiscal impact statement issued by Legislative Fiscal, but that statement has no recommendation for a subsequent Ways and Means referral.
Okay. Glenn, you want to do it again?
And Paul Grove.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Senate Bill 57 does exactly as the committee administrator described. We are prohibited by statute from financing with industrial development bonds facilities that generate electricity or the distribution of electrical energy. as near as I can tell, every state agency that has bonding authority has that same prohibition, and it dates from decades ago when I think that utilities were positioning themselves to be the only energy-generating facilities in the state. Certainly, times have changed, and now we actually have the support of utilities to generate power. What really brought this issue to mind is during the recovery zone bond period, we had several municipalities who are equally exempt by statute from energy generation facilities as well as counties approach us and ask us if we could issue bonding for the financing of those energy generating facilities, and we had to turn them down as well. So this is not prohibited in federal law. It's only a state statute, and what we're seeking to do is bring the state statute into conformance with federal industrial development bond law so we can support local interests when they want to finance facilities.
Lynn, I forgot to ask you to put your name into the record for the...
I'm sorry. My name is Lynn Chesler. I'm Deputy Director of the Oregon Business Development Department.
So I guess I have a question about, are we talking about utilities or other parties here?
Industrial development bonds are for private party financing.
Well, that would include utilities.
They could, but industrial development bonds also have a limitation of $10 million so per project. So you're not going to find a significant power generation facility being developed by this. This is going to be smaller local generating facilities that support their own interests.
Do you have examples of people who would have liked to have used them and approached the department?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, during the recovery zone bond process, several municipalities that had sewage treatment plants with land wanted to use that excess land to install solar arrays, and we couldn't help finance them, and as I said, they're prohibited by statute from financing them as well.
Haven't they been able to do it as a GO bond if it was a municipality?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I understand their statute, they are precluded from whatever source and financing means to owned power generating facilities.
Okay.
If I may, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove. I'm with Business Oregon also. And to your question regarding some specific examples, there was a clean tech company that was looking to come to Oregon, and we were examining potential financing options, and the industrial development bond program was examined, and on the by the nature of their activity, on the advice of bond counsel, we were told that this program would not be suitable for their need, because within the range of activities that they were engaging in, one of them had to do with the monitoring of the electricity that was being generated as well as the sale. And then there was an example in Clackamas County with respect to the ARA program, and a shopping center was looking to finance the installation of solar panels on its roof, and that was determined by bond counsel to be an ineligible activity as well.
Questions of the panel? Seeing none, thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
And anybody else who wishes to talk on this? Seeing none, we will close on Senate Bill 57, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill, I think that's 162, on 192. Richard.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 192 requires the State Workforce Investment Board to include in its plans for green jobs growth an analysis of occupations in the forest products industries to determine key growth factor and other employment projections for green jobs in the forest products industry, and to determine the educational standards required for the current and emerging green occupations in the forest product industry. It requires the State Workforce Investment Board to identify those forest product industries to be classified as high-demand green industries. It requires the Oregon Business Development Department to include forest product industries when developing criteria for investing in green economy industries.
There is no revenue impact and minimal expenditure impact on this measure.
All right. Well, I have three people who want to talk, and I bet you all want to talk about the same thing. Watch all three come up. Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Cludine, and Ms. Van Natta. I'm just guessing that you're all in the same position on this bill.
Chair Beyer, Committee for the Record, Bill Clinton, Carpenters Industrial Council. Thank you for hearing this bill today. First, let me back up and give you a little history where this bill came from. In 2009, House Bill 3300 was passed by both chambers, signed by the governor, and basically, this is where we're at today. But if you look at page 1, we looked at line 18, and in that 3900 bill, it had dislocated workers in the timber, agriculture, or energy sectors. We took out the word timber and inserted forest products. We felt that that would give a better definition exactly of what jobs we were talking about and the displaced people in this field. And believe me, committee, we have some displaced people in these fields. On page 2, starting on line 19 through 20, it more or less directs the various agencies to look at these various jobs and determine how best to retrain these people into the green economy jobs that are out there, hopefully they're out there, to put these people back to work. On line 30, we actually defined every job that we felt was involved in the forest products industry. And as you notice, it includes businesses that grow, manage, harvest, transport, or process forest, wood, or paper products. That pretty well covers every job that's out there. Now, for sure, the landowners aren't going to fall into this displaced worker program. But as we develop on down the line, this is where these jobs have been disappearing. And if I may say, this training, when developed, will come out of grants and various other financial incentives. There's no revenue attached to this. Hopefully, the federal grants and state grants to put our people back to work will help get these people back on their feet. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Got to make up your mind.
Okay. For the record, Chair Beyer, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the Oregon Political Director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. And please don't ask me to say that again. But quite seriously, this is important to our organization. In the last couple of years, we have lost over 900 members. And it's really sad because these are willing and able workers that would rather work than not. And hopefully this may give them some remnants of what they once had. So I urge your support and vote for this. And I'll answer any questions if there are any.
Okay. Heather?
Chair Beyer, committee members, for the record, Catherine Venata, Governmental Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, very pleased to be here between my labor guys, right between them, I might add. Northwest Pulp and Paper supports this bill. The state of Washington, in their 2010 session, passed a similar bill, and Northwest Pulp and Paper worked with our unions in the state of Washington to do the same same thing. You have my written testimony. It goes through the bill section by section and says why we support it. But I'd like to highlight that just within the last almost 2 years, we've had one pulp mill and one pulp and paper mill close in the state of Oregon with dislocated workers, as Mr. Sullivan pointed out. We believe that access to retraining and the definition of green jobs would help to ensure these folks who unfortunately do lose their jobs, to help retrain them and offer them opportunities. We believe in the forest products industry that pulp and paper jobs should be considered to be green jobs also, and we outline that reasoning. And basically, we would encourage your support of this.
Thank you. Is there any questions of this panel?
Quick question.
Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the panel, whoever developed the language, you missed sales as a part of the... There's transportation, and there's manufacturing, and management of... as a forest product sales guy, you missed sales.
Chair Barr, evidently, we have a wood salesman present.
Yes, you do.
I included that part.
But I still like the bill.
Under the management part.
Under management. I wonder.
Thank you.
Is there any other special interest questions? Seeing none, that's all I have signed up on the bill. Is there anybody else who wishes? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Who wishes to testify? You guys are Business Oregon is mentioned in the bill. Do you wish to comment at all? You're fine with the bill. All righty. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 192, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 192. And the chair would move Senate Bill 192 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion?
Simply like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
You can if you wish.
Okay.
I think you just did.
Well, I just did, and I'm not sure if...
I'm not sure you have one, but...
I'm not sure that I have one either, but Mr. Chair, for the record, I am the member of an LLC that works in the forest products industry. So
noted. Okay, any other declarations or whatever? Okay, so is there any opposition to the bill? There's no opposition. Senate Bill 192 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Edwards, would you like to carry it?
Sure.
Senator Edwards is carrying. Let me check here with the end. All right, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 57. And Lynn, can I have you come back up and ask you a question? I assume I know the answer to this, but Senator Girard has a question in terms of expanding. Oh, it was yours. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Burdick has a question. In terms of expanding the industrial revenue bonds to cover energy and energy. The question is the state adequately protected from potential defaults? And can you talk about...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Burdick particularly, yes, what we do when we do industrial development bonds is we work with a borrower's lending institution. We issue the bonds, pass the proceeds of those bonds to the borrower's banker. The banker fully indemnifies us against any loss, and they take responsibility for managing that loan with the borrower. So we have no risk.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. Mm-hmm. So it's a lender who would be out of the money if the borrower defaults?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Burdick, yes, they would make us whole if there's a default.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And just if we can recess for about 5 minutes here. I need another member for
Okay, we'll come back out of recess and reopen the work session on Senate Bill 57. Chair moves Senate Bill 57 to the floor with the due pass. Is there discussion? Is there any opposition? There's no opposition. Senate Bill 57 is moved to the floor with the due pass. Senator Starr, we move Senate Bill 192. Would you like me to open that and then allow you to vote on it?
Sure.
Okay. Reopen on Senate Bill 192 to allow Senator Starr to vote on it. Is there any objection to that? There's not. Senator Starr, how would you like to vote?
Aye.
Senator Starr votes aye.
Mr. Chair, while you're doing that sort of thing, there were a couple of ones I missed.
No, but those were the only two we moved.
Oh, okay. Then I got some bad info from Senator Girard.
You did?
Uh-oh.
What did he think? No, those are the only... The others we didn't have fiscals on.
Senator Girard does that a lot.
So I think, Richard, that takes us to the end.
Yep.
Have I totally confused the day?
No.
I was working hard at it. So if there's no other business before us...
We didn't move 56.
We did not move 56. We did not move it intentionally.
Yep.
For right now.
Okay.
So we are adjourned.